Moncrief on News Talk.
Besides playing golf and attacking various American cities, one of Donald Trump's favourite pastimes is to sue mainstream media outlets, the latest being a claim of $15 billion against the New York Times. So, apart from money, what are his motives here, and can he succeed in silencing all criticism of his presidency? Graham Finley is a lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. Afternoon, Graham.
Afternoon.
He's doing this a lot.
He is. He loves suing people.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. But he's really ratcheted up in the second term because, I mean, it combines his two favorite things, I think, both as a statesman and as a private businessman, lashing out at people and punishing them, and money.
Yeah.
And he's getting both, really. He's still, you know, maybe the first one was suing the Des Moines Register, because they published a poll. This was, if you're a real nerd about American politics, this came out and it looked like Harris might win Iowa.
Yeah.
It was wrong.
Yeah.
She did not win Iowa.
That poll had been accurate in the past.
Yes.
No, it was a highly respected poll.
It was kind of a famous sort of like folksy, like local Iowa poll, which had been very reliable in the past. And Iowa is until relatively recently, a pretty good bellwether where the election's going to go. And he's still suing the Des Moines Register, which doesn't have anything like the money of all the other people he's suing. Mm. And, you know, but there was, you know, putting out a poll, which turns out to be an error, isn't strictly like defamation or electoral interference, neither of which are totally well defined. But there is some really interesting law around this. But then, yes, since he sued ABC for a mischaracterization of the offense he was found to have perpetrated on E. Jean Carroll in the form of, I mean, I guess I can say this, Stephanopoulos, the commentator, used the word rape when it should have been sexual assault. Sexual
misconduct.
It was not sexual assault. It was sexual. I had it a little while ago, but
okay,
it's a very specific definition of this particular form of sexual aggression.
Yeah.
Which is different from rape. And ABC thought they could probably win this one. They sued them for $15 billion. But, you know, Disney, their owners, in their wisdom, thought that it might set a bad precedent because of the distinction between the two particular forms of offense. And again, it was a civil finding that they decided to settle. Now, they're partly worried about retribution on their much larger and non-media company or other aspects of their media empire. And partly they claimed it's because they thought it might undermine this very important decision, New York Times Company v. Sullivan, which is a 1964 decision, which says that if a politician, you know, has something in the media where the media publishes a story where there are slight errors of detail, you know, it's not enough to find defamation.
Okay, and absence of malice.
And so what they have to show is not just that there were falsehoods, but there has to be actual malice, which is hard to prove, like genocidal intent.
Yes.
Right? So just a little segue there.
Yeah.
But you know, this comes from a case where the New York Times published an article about the police action repressing Martin Luther King, and it got some superficial details wrong, like what song the protesters sang and stuff like that. And so the head of the chief of police of Montgomery, Alabama, sued the Times in an Alabama court and won a huge payout of $500,000, which was a lot in 1960. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, which unanimously raised this actual malice standard. And that has been a cornerstone of press freedom ever since. So that Donald Trump is – so Disney wanted to protect this judgment because we don't know what the Supreme Court's going to say at this point.
Yes.
And there are some people on the Supreme Court who want to revisit this, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch. But he's since sued CBS over the way they edited an interview with Kamala Harris and – its company, which was facing a merger approval from the Federal Communications Commission, decided it was worth settling. Now, he sues for like $16 billion and he gets $16
million. Yes. Yeah.
And it doesn't go directly to him. It just goes to his totally independent and not for his personal use whatsoever foundation and presidential library. So, and then since he's suing, so they caved, but since he sued the Wall Street Journal over the signature, which and drawing, which looks awful lot like his in the Epstein book, and now the New York Times.
Yeah. And parallel to that, the Washington Post, and it's kind of, this is slightly opposite, given that Robert Redford died yesterday and he was in All the President's Men, which was, you know, the Washington Post's golden era, I suppose. They've completely flipped now. And they're now pro-MAGA papers.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little short of pro-MAGA. I subscribe to a lot of newspapers, including the Post and the Times, although because of recent editorial decisions by the Post, you're not getting any more of my money. I'll tell you that. But no, for example, in the aftermath of the horrendous assassination of Charlie Kirk, they've just let their last remaining black full-time opinion writer go because she used a paraphrase and seems to have presented as a quotation. This is very much of a piece of Jeff Bezos saying, you know, they're completely editorially independent, except they will no longer publish articles in their opinion section, except those favoring free markets and individual liberties, which has made it a considerably less interesting paper and arguably not a newspaper at all. So, and the big problem behind all of this, you'll have already guessed, is that all of these papers and television stations are owned by giant conglomerates who already fear Trump, but are also not averse to some of his maybe more pro-corporate moves and are completely prepared to appease him in quite concrete ways.
Yeah, the jury found that Trump had sexually abused Carol.
Yes, that was
under
the word
New York
I was looking
law,
for.
But did not rape her.
I didn't want to get you in trouble, Sean.
So. That's okay. Well, I mean, you know, he's probably working his way through a list. You know, we're possibly both on it, or be flattered to think we were. Yeah. It's kind of cumbersome, though, in a way, in that these kind of lawsuits take a while to work their way through the courts.
No, I mean, the Des Moines Register one is still in the courts. And you know, they will go on for quite a long time. People are genuinely worried that this Supreme Court will overturn, weaken, qualify New York Times v. Sullivan. And because that has been sort of their strategy. I mean, we're lucky that both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal have deep pockets in the form of Rupert Murdoch. And he's actually kind of fascinating in this regard, in that, you know, and Rupert Murdoch is not averse to doing some editorial control over his own stations and media outlets, I think it's fair to say. But currently they're fighting it, maybe because it's just such a weak suit. I mean, the lawsuit against the New York Times is about statements of fact, basically, which have, you know, reporting on an interview with John Kelly, his former chief of staff, you know, slight turns of phrase about him being discovered as the future star of The Apprentice when he was already quite famous to begin with. You know, things like this, the placement of their endorsement of Kamala Harris, which was
on front page.
I mean, all of these things just do not rise to the level of defamation or even falsehood.
Yeah.
So what is going on? I mean, he always files these suits in very friendly courts. He's filed it in Florida, but it's a George Herbert Walker Bush appointee. And even Trump's appointees have shown a willingness to sort of dismiss lawsuits or at least put stays on them. The biggest, or not stays, So what we're seeing is them filtering very slowly up to the Supreme Court, which has shown a real reluctance to take them on directly. And so you get a lot of these sort of unsigned decisions allowing the administration to continue to do what it's doing, you know, pending them actually finally hearing it.
Yeah, but could that have the effect, though, Graham, that say in the case in the New York Times, you know, that their legal advice is don't let this go as far as the Supreme Court because you could overturn and learn a law that has a precedent that has protected media for decades?
It just seems like if it's not protecting you, it's not protecting you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're settling for large amounts with Donald Trump, right? And this even before we get to other cases where people, like universities are settling with Trump, law firms are settling with Trump for much larger amounts than what we're talking about here. You know, I mean, if it's not protecting you, it's not protecting you. So I mean, eventually the Supreme Court's going to have to hear it. This Supreme Court has, let's say, a more flexible relationship with precedent than some previous iterations of it. So we genuinely don't really know what will happen. But the tendency in its sort of quick determinations has been to really let the administration do whatever it wants. Like, even if there's supposed to be independence for certain agencies, such that you can't just fire someone without cause, they've allowed him to do so pending the hearing of the actual lawsuit. Even in birthright citizenship, which is in the Constitution and is almost unarguably violated by his birthright citizenship order, you know, they have allowed states to cooperate with that executive order if they feel like it, as specific class actions by people directly affected by it work their way through the courts, you know, so that there are no more sort of universal, you know, stays on their particular behavior in this area.
And he's always argued, particularly the New York Times, that these are just, you know, fronts for the Democrats and they hate me, et cetera, et cetera. That would it be fair to say that the New York Times and many other publications in the States that have leaned left and tend to support the Democrats have kind of bent over backwards since he was elected this time to you know, present more right-wing commentators in their opinion pages and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you are seeing various media outlets make a shift towards the center. I think CNN may be the most obvious one. And the New York Times has certainly been willing to platform loads and loads of people. And I mean, one interesting moment in the New York Times, which I also subscribe to, and you will find a diversity of opinions, but you'll certainly find plenty of right-wing opinion, yeah, you know, and pro-Republican opinion in the Times. A lot of their conservative columnists are very, you know, critical of Trump or are really wringing their hands because they're not natural Trumpers. But, you know, there was a really interesting moment when Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, basically, and this seems like a bygone day, you know, was urging Trump to put troops in the streets to deal with Black Lives Matter and things like that. Now, of course, we have troops in the streets, you know, and there was an uprising in the New York Times press room about letting a senator advocate what they thought was like the military takeover of the United States. So, you know, that didn't happen. You know, it's not happening these days. And so it's working. People are genuinely cowed by this administration and also by just the sheer relentlessness with which it's pursuing its ideological enemies. So just recently, in a very like a surreal moment, J.D. Vance, and again, I really want to reiterate, I'm genuinely disturbed by the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And it's very, very bad for the United States.
Yeah.
And no one can see this as...
Why Charlie Kirk in particular, given that there has been a tendency towards political assassinations of that, particularly in the last few years, one could almost say there's a culture of political assassinations in the United States dating back to Abraham Lincoln.
There's a technology of political assassinations. Yes. There's some really, really interesting research. And in fact, some people before, you know, some of the motives of the shooter, which are being bandied about. And
yeah, well, they were revealed today.
Constantly being revised, you know, but, you know, said that, look, the U.S. stands out among all countries in terms of political violence, and that has a very high percentage of lone wolf shooters who are very hard to prevent. Like, if you form a militia in Michigan and you're like, I hate the governor of Michigan and I'm going to go march on this has all happened, by the way, on the Capitol of Michigan, and I'm going to occupy it with long guns, and we have meetings and we train and we have a newsletter and a web page. And, you know, those people you can infiltrate, those people you can monitor, those people you can try and stop them from getting to the Capitol unsuccessfully, right? This is a real world example. But if you're a lone wolf shooter whose ideology is a whole grab bag of online memes or a whole grab bag of stuff off the internet, or just you want to become famous in the case of John Hinckley, who shot Ronald Reagan to impress Jodie Foster, the actress. Yeah. Or, I mean, we know his name now. But these are all the kinds of people who are hard to stop and who, you know, don't conform to any particular political ideology. So we should be careful not to say they killed X
Yeah, because yeah, of course. Yeah.
Who is they, right? Yeah. And I think it may turn out to be the case with this particular shooter. And the difference between the lone wolves of Ireland, touch wood, if there is any in the studio, which, no. you know, is access to long guns, right?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And firearms training. And so, I mean, President Trump's would-be assassin, you know, in Pennsylvania is a classic example of this. We don't know the motivations. Very little is still talked about. Now, this has fueled a lot of conspiracy theories, but he's the ideal type of this kind of shooter.
Yeah. Graham, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. That was Graham Finley there from the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.